And welcome back, friends. This is Lisa Lacey. I'm your host for Notes from the Edge. And this is the place we have the conversations we should have been having all along. In here, we talk about the things you ain't talking about, but we're going to go ahead and talk about them. And today's guest is my new friend, Massimo Rigatti. I was lucky enough to be a guest on his podcast, and then I was like, we need to swap. So here he is. So Massimo is an author, entrepreneur, podcast host, and addiction recovery advocate. He is also the creator of the Sober Method. That is S-O-B-E-R. It's an acronym for a framework built around stoic principles. And I want to dig more into that because I don't know a lot about it, Massimo. Mm-hmm. Self-observation, behavior modification, and the execution of positive habits and holistic restoration. And we love that because we talk so much about that. His story includes addiction, bipolar disorder, professional success, then devastating loss, and the long, complicated work of rebuilding confidence, not from the outside in, but from the inside out. So this is not simply a conversation about putting down a drink. It's about what we reach for when we do not know how to sit with ourselves, what conventional recovery models may overlook, and whether confidence, identity, and self-trust are essential pieces of lasting sobriety. And we already know the answer to that, but we're going to dig into it. Welcome to Notes from the Edge, Massimo. How are you doing today, my friend?
I am doing fantastic. Thank you so much for having me on today. And I hope that our second conversation on air will be just as fruitful and exciting as the first one was.
No doubt. With the both of us combined, we're all set. We're all set. Well, my friend, you have described addiction as part of a much larger internal battle. So before you were ready to become sober, what was this? What was this internal battle? Talk to me about that. And mind you, remember, I'm celebrating alongside my husband. We met 30 days clean. Don't recommend 13 stepping your way into a healthy marriage, but we did it. But 8 years of sobriety together. So we're going to really dig into that. And we both struggle with our own mental health challenges, different brains, mm-hmm. different mental illnesses. But what do you think the internal struggle is?
Well, for me, my internal struggle was abandonment. And I do have, of course, the dual diagnosis of suffering from bipolar disorder. Now, bipolar disorder for me is now completely 100% in check, which is amazing and
congratulations.
Awesome.
Congratulations.
Honestly, I cannot sit here and tell you the last time that I had a depressive episode. So that's
yay.
It's been more than a year. So that's a very positive outcome of everything that I've done and all the work I've done on myself. But abandonment is huge. And it's something that follows you. It follows me today, even with all the work that I've done on myself. It's just manageable. And that deep sense of wanting to belong and being someone who is very outgoing and very gregarious like I am, it is tough to hold that outward appearance that I did for most of my life, while at the same time suffering almost an introverted internal mind structure and being afraid that everything that I did and said was not accepted, that nobody really liked me. And that was my suffering that I carried with me my whole life until I found sobriety. And like I said, I still carry it today. It's just muted. And
manageable, right? We learn to manage it effectively. You know, some of these things are probably going to be lifelong things that we, as we do this work, we work with coaches like yourself, we work with the Sober Method, we just get really skilled at managing it. And I love the fact that you're highlighting abandonment, because when I didn't realize how terrible my own abandonment issues were until early into my current marriage. Mm-hmm. And when my husband would leave the house, Massimo, I compare it to being a little kid. You know, the peekaboo game, how little kids, like, you play peekaboo and they think you've gone away. Like, literally, I would feel like I was dying when he left. Like, I was like, he's not coming back. This is it. It's all over. Right? Your mind starts doing the loop of he's gone for good. It was terrible. It felt like death.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like separation anxiety. If you're a dog or something, you know, a very, very comparable type of behavior as well. It's like, it is absolutely, what is going on? I need to call him right away. It was probably your instinct.
And I did. Poor guy. Yeah. I'm telling you guys, it's hard to 13th step your way. And there's a reason why they say stay single for a little while, but we did it and we're best friends and we laugh and I'm glad that we listened to our intuition about everything as we moved along. But I love the fact that you're highlighting abandonment issues. So let's talk about this, because I think a lot of people out there may be struggling from abandonment that started, of course, in childhood, from even something as not so simple as emotional neglect, can be very serious, as bad as physical abuse can in terms of how it affects your psyche. So how can people start determining that, oh, my behaviors in my relationships, especially, may be coming from my abandonment issues? What are some things maybe to look for?
This is a tough one to immediately track down, because first of all, you have to recognize, why am I feeling this way? And so you have to be very honest in answering these questions. Why am I suddenly having anxiety because my partner left the house? You know? And then, oh, well, I must be afraid that he's going to leave me. Okay. When was the very first time that I felt afraid that someone was going to leave me?
Yes, that's it. And that's getting down to the root, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And that's a tough one. A lot of people don't know. A lot of times you have to sit in silence and go, oh, I remember this time when I was a teenager and I was in, you know, I was dating someone, and then, oh, wait a second, that wasn't the first time. I remember when my sister, you know, like, and you have to walk it all the way back until you find that actual root. I didn't find mine until I was in rehab. And even though I maybe had a glimmer of thinking that that might be the issue. And for me, mine was tied to the fact that my father left before I was even born. And then when he had an opportunity to enter my life when I was 8, he didn't show up in court. And so it left me feeling like, I'm not worth anything to anyone, let alone who I should be worth something to. And that also created a secondary, I would say, character flaw in me that I've worked very, very hard in my recovery to undo, which is, I worked so hard to be the best at absolutely everything, because I was going to prove to this guy that I didn't even know that I was worth not walking away from.
Wow. Ooh, I just got chills. That's so huge. I think a lot of us high achievers and high performers, mine was with my mother, but I was a straight A student and captain of the cheerleading team and head of the leadership team. And then, you know, made 6 figures by the time I was 21. It still ain't good enough. As a matter of fact, when I wrote my memoir, this is what she said the other day. She goes, in your memoir, Notes from a Certified Madwoman, guys, that's the title coming out in October. She goes, are you just talking about that your brain broke? Are you talking about why your brain broke? I was like, yeah, you win it. You had to go in it somewhere. That's exactly what she was getting at. So family members tend to not like memoirs if there's there has been a lot of family secrets. But my friends, Massimo is pointing to the fact that even, you know, you think high school and then you go, wait a minute, let me go a little bit farther back. And it may be 3 or 4 that you can remember the first time that you were abandoned or emotionally neglected. So it takes time to sit with yourself and be brutally honest. And sometimes that's not always fun, to be like, wow, you know, my dad used to leave for 6 months and I'd come home from school and he'd be sitting on the couch. Hey, sweetheart. I'd be like, hey, dad. And I go into my room and do my homework. Nothing was, I don't know where he was. I don't know why he's back. But yeah, nothing was explained. So take the time to do the external, internal excavation and be willing to be brutally honest with yourself, because it wasn't your fault. And we as children always internalize it as it must be me, because we can't blame our caregivers because we depend on them for life. So what do? We blame ourselves. So Massimo, thank you for highlighting that. Abandonment issues can absolutely feel like death. And I think they just get glossed over and even just therapy as, oh, it's just abandonment issues. No, they can run your life.
Yeah, absolutely. And let me just add that one tool that is really helpful in this is journaling. And this leans into the whole stoic basis of the sober method, because that requires being reflective. But if you have the ability to sit and write down by hand, I highly recommend by hand, because
pen to paper, right?
Pen to paper. It's the best way to do it. And start going and searching your thoughts through this method, because you can do it over multiple days. You can push yourself as hard as you can and then walk away from it and come back and see, oh, okay, this is where I was at. Okay. Was there anything else? And then you can keep searching. So you're not putting yourself through the turmoil within your own mind. You actually get the release, and it's very cathartic to get that release and journaling it out than it is to think about it in your own mind, because then you're just going to go into mental circles.
I love that. And you know what, my friends, it doesn't have to be for 5 hours a day. You could do 5-10 minutes in the morning, you know, put your journal right next to your bed and, you know, set a timer and just automatic, right? No editing, no, just let it flow onto the paper. And we have identified ourselves as a little bit older than some people, because pen to paper is the way I roll with everything that I write. And my scribble scratch, nobody else can read but me. So my journal is safe. So I love
that. I don't care if you're 9 or 10 years old and hearing this. I mean, seriously,
pen to paper. Pens are cool and paper is awesome.
There's something that, and there's plenty of studies that prove this, and I cite them a lot, which is that connection between the physical connection between you writing something and your brain, it cements it. One of the ways that I used to study for tests when I was younger is I'd rewrite all my notes and I would do nothing else. I would just rewrite all my notes. That's how I studied for tests, because it puts it back into your brain. You're forced to actually think about it, write it physically. And then when you're taking a test, you're like, you can actually, if you think hard enough, you can begin to remember yourself writing the note.
I love that. Yes, as an actress, that's how I always prepared for memorizing my script. I would write the whole script down.
That's good.
Write it down. Yeah. I would write it. I would type it. I would write it. Yep. Mm-hmm. That's how I, and people are like, oh, you remember every word. Well, I spent a lot of time working towards that, but pen to paper is pure magic. And the messages you will have for yourself are pretty dang cool too. You know,
absolutely.
The things you will uncover. So we'll talk about the stoic principles in a minute, but I want to talk about this, because I think so often mental health is not addressed in sobriety communities. I think it's overlooked in a lot of sobriety communities, but you live with bipolar disorder as well as a history of addiction. I live with a gazillion labels. They can't even figure out how disordered my brain is. I went into inpatient rehab thinking I had a minor drinking problem and a bad marriage and came out with a chart this thick. So there was a lot of disorders in there. But how does those experiences intersect in your lived experience? Did you separate them? Are they survival behaviors? They're your identity? How did those coincide in your lived experience?
Well, in the lived experience, at the very beginning, the driver for addiction came out of the bipolar disorder. So I leaned into drinking in college because it was becoming out of control. I was diagnosed as bipolar my freshman year of college. And of course, I discarded this and said there was nothing wrong with me, because that's just who children of the 80s are, I guess.
We're fine.
we're totally fine.
Suck it up, seven up, man up. That's what I got told. I got told to man up. I gave it a go.
If you were born in the 70s and lived most of your life, and, you know, yes, this is just how it
Gen
was.
Xers, guys, we're totally dating ourselves.
We are built differently.
We are.
So I just masked this with alcohol. It worked. I don't need antidepressants. I'll just use alcohol. And so over time, that became a dependence. And as it became a dependence, I leaned into it more and more, and then it became an addiction. Yep. And
it's so sneaky.
It is sneaky. The problem with alcohol is using that as the cope is alcohol is a depressant. So what am I doing? I'm depressed, and normally it wouldn't be depressed. I would use alcohol to tamp down my manias because it would just get out of control. I couldn't sleep. I was thinking, I would literally think so fast that it would feel very strange. It's hard to explain to anyone, but basically I would be able to see the world and it would be moving in slow motion. It's real time, but it would move in my mind in slow-mo while my mind was thinking super fast. Is how I was interacting with the world in those manias. And so it's really bizarre. But alcohol would take that edge off and then everything would go normal. But if you drink too much, then you get depressed. And when you're depressed, oh, I needed a sidecar. And that's when cocaine came in and helped me out. And so those were my two friends. And obviously the cocaine is also the best antidepressant there is available on the market today. Unfortunately, it's illegal.
I had those friends too, my friend.
Yes. So when
for a little while.
I mean, it works. It's fantastic. I mean, like nothing will get you out of a depression faster.
Oh boy, but coming down. Oh yeah. Man. Yeah, that's brutal. That's brutal. That's when depression really hits. Yeah. So
but
it's
I
the
didn't
cycle.
See them as yeah, it's a cycle. And I didn't see them as separate. Now, when I did start to see them as separate is as I became sober and realized that the management of the bipolar disorder needed to be done in such a way that it didn't lead me back to where I was before. And ultimately, I've managed to attack that in two separate ways. One, stoicism, self-reflection, and the like, believe it or not, has had a huge impact on managing my overall mood and bipolar. But it wasn't the only thing. The other thing was the fact that I completely switched my diet, and I live on 100% non-processed food diet and a very high protein diet as well. Mm-hmm. And within 6 months of switching to that, well, I think I was about maybe 40% of my diet at that point was non-processed foods, but I've achieved basically effectively 100% at this point.
Nice.
But about 6 months in, I just realized that I hadn't been taking my antidepressant. And I called my doctor. It's like, well, how long has it been? And I'm like, I don't know, about 2.5 months. And he's like, well, if you don't feel like you need it, then don't take it. And I'm like, yeah. Okay. So here we are.
That is how important what we're feeding our body is to our minds.
Well, yeah. Our brain is the largest consumer of calories. And I think that what often gets forgotten is the fact that you quite literally think what you eat. So if you're eating garbage, you're going to think garbage. And so if you eat junk food, you're going to have junk thoughts, I guess is the best way that I can really. So you got to feed your brain the best high quality food that you can possibly put into yourself, because that's what it needs to eat. It takes discipline though. Okay.
But you can start small. You can start small.
I started very small.
How did you start for the people out there that are like, oh, that looks like a big task to me?
You know what? My very first start was I started making sourdough. I'm like, I'm going to go off eating store-bought bread. And okay. I thought, this is one thing. Yeah. And I'm going to be honest, that proved to be too cumbersome. So I went to making just white bread.
Okay.
I make sourdough now, but like sourdough is an art. Do not start there. Okay. So I just started making loaves of white bread, and just that was enough. Within a month, I noticed a difference.
It made me want to do more.
Then I cut out all of the like snacks, like the the Doritos and the potato chips, and then I already didn't drink really soda, but no soda, no sugar. Mm-hmm. I have very low sugar diet now, and once by the time I had achieved that 6 month mark, I effectively wasn't eating any processed sugar and very little actual sugar, and so it totally changed the way I was thinking and the clarity. Oh my goodness. I can't even tell you how much clearer I think now. I would never want to go back.
Yeah, I love what you said. I want to circle back to it. You think what you eat. So yeah. Clever. So clever. You think what you eat. So, you know, another day, maybe we'll have you back and we'll talk about what we're feeding our minds like digitally and stuff, but you think what you eat. So let's talk about, because you've brought them up twice already, and I don't know a lot about Stoic principles and Stoicism, and that mm-hmm. has helped you so tremendously and mm-hmm. is such a huge part of what you teach and how you help people transform. What are we talking about here? Teach me.
Yeah. You know, the problem with a lot of people, they say, oh, Stoicism, and there is immense complexity. So I'm going to try to stay surface level, because otherwise everyone's just going to tune this out and like,
don't have people tune out my show now.
Their eyes are going to glaze over and they're going to take a short little 5-minute nap while I explain. And I don't want any of that. I mean, like, I am too high energy for anyone to be taking a nap. So here's the best way that I can explain it. What we're doing is we're doing a deep introspective look into your own mind. And this requires you to sit quietly with your own thoughts. So taking that phone, putting it in the other room, and then asking yourself like one deep reflective question, like, what today did I avoid because it was uncomfortable to me and why?
Ooh, great start. One question.
Just one question. And then sit with that. Have your little journal there. Jot down anything that comes to mind. It doesn't even have to be a full sentence. You know, you just jot something down. And then after you finish that little exercise, look at what you wrote and be like, now ask yourself this next question. What could I have done differently that would have had a better outcome for me? And so you go through that list and you think about those and you jot those things down. That's a Stoic reflection. I mean, that's how easy it is. It's just, that's a start. As you go deeper and deeper, then you start
asking more complex questions.
That's when you start. You start asking yourself much more complicated questions. You know,
but at that point, they're not complicated anymore because you've already worked through the surface level stuff. So you do want to dig deeper. I'm assuming it's a process that builds, right? It builds on itself.
Yeah,
but
absolutely.
My friends, Massimo pointed out a good point. Phone away, literally away from your body, like away from your body, because you can actually think clearly. There's science around that too. But away from your body.
Other room.
We're going down all kinds of tangents today. Away from your body, pen and paper. We love that. We support that. And start with one question. Yeah. You know, if something happened, you were an ass to your partner, and or they were an ass to you, and you know, start there. Just one question and reflection. He said reflection is so valuable. As what I believe is a skill able to do.
It is a skill. And then what the next step in all of this is, once you've looked at these things, okay, you've done your little task of reflecting on everything. Now we're going to lean into what Stoics call the dichotomy of control, which is there are things that you can control and there are things that you can't control. So now look at what happened and look at what items you could have controlled in that situation.
If you, not them guys, you.
Yeah, you can only control yourself. So you have to look back at what you just like had this huge challenge within yourself during the day. And you can look and say, well, wait, I didn't have any control over any of the stuff that happened. Well, guess what? Then it doesn't matter. That's noise. That's noise. Throw it away.
Throw the noise away. Yeah. As my new mentor tells me, go put it on the altar. Just put it on the altar of the castle that I've created in my mind. Just let it go. You're absolutely right. But we have to be self-aware enough to realize, there was nothing I could have done to change or avoid that. It's not my fault. Mm-hmm. And then you can let it go. And talk to us. What if we discover, there's some things I could have done in that argument to have made it turn out differently? What do we do with that information?
Well, then we're looking, we're into technically step 2 and 3 of the sober method, which is observe and behavior. So you're observing what you did and you're then looking at a behavior. What should have I done? And then you map this so that the next time this happens, you are going to react this different way. What would have created a better outcome in your opinion, not only for the whole situation, but for you? What would have given you your peace? What would have made things better? So the next time this comes up, this is the execute step of sober. You test it. See if it works.
Experiment. Play.
You are experimenting with yourself. And I mean, so it's a fun exercise. So you test it out. If it works, great. You know, you found a new solution.
You discovered it.
Yeah.
An answer. Yeah.
Yeah. And if not, go back to observe. Okay, what happened differently this time that didn't happen last time? And then you make a new adjustment in behavior, and then you try it again. And you know, and once you find what works, you move on to what is the R, which is restore, which is this behavior is probably impacted not just you and, you know, your significant other or whoever this was interlocking challenge was with. It's probably impacted a lot of people. So in restore, you think about all the people that may have been impacted by your type of reaction that you just corrected, and you go and you do the traditional type of make amends. You reach out to people and say, hey, you know what? I used to blow up at you all the time because of blah, you know, and I want to fix that, you know? So
I apologize. Yeah.
Yeah. I apologize. But one very, very important thing that I want to make sure that everybody looks at is that forgiveness does not mean reconciliation. Okay. So you are not there to reconcile your relationship with someone. You've already fallen apart from this person for a reason. And so they can stay in your past. All you're looking for is the release yourself that I've reached back out. I've made my amends. I'm not looking to, you know, the best way to end these conversations is, well, I'll see you around. You take care. And
that's easy. Yeah.
That's it.
I'll see you around.
Yeah. And leave it at that. Don't try to, you know, you're no longer friends with someone for
a reason. Don't force yourself, right?
Yeah.
To reconcile, but own your part. And
that's
then
right.
You do feel better. There is a sense of release and catharsis and freedom that that absolutely comes from that. What I love about your SOBER method, and guys, that's S-O-B-E-R, it's an acronym, is the middle step is observe. And observation is not neutral. That is quantum physics. That is quantum mechanics. The moment you observe it, my friends, guess what? It's already starting to shift for you. And so that's why doing the earlier steps of taking the quiet time, take pen to paper, really reflect, and then observe on those reflections, boom, you've already done like 75% of the work. The next is just like steps, right?
Yeah.
So observation is not neutral. It is vital to having you live that life of peace that Massimo just brought up, the word peace. It gives you a sense of peace. So you created the SOBER method framework because you believe there are some other programs out there that aren't always enough on their own. Mm-hmm. Talk to me about that.
Well, I started out, like so many of us in the addiction space, by going to AA. And lots of people attend NA as well, one or both or others, depending on the addiction. And the structure is good, but it has this tendency, in my view, to look in the rearview mirror. You're constantly looking back. We're constantly rehashing and talking about the past. I did this. This could have done better, but we're not looking at the future. We're in the state that it's the only area of mental health, and I don't like this, where we have this negative reinforcement. We stand up and we say, I'm an alcoholic.
It's so shame-based.
It is. I'm an alcoholic. Yeah. Like, there's never any point. I actually was asked to leave an AA meeting about 5 years sober because I was not willing to say that I was an alcoholic anymore, because I didn't feel like it. I didn't have any tendencies in that direction. And I actually said, I think that continuing to say this only affirms failure in the future, because if I say that I am something, then I will become that thing
forever.
And I'm not an alcoholic.
Yeah,
I'm not. Don't be defined by what held you back in the past. Be defined by who you are today. And so that's what I really stress in the sober method is that you are building a new self.
And yes.
That new self has the confidence to walk proud in what they are and in what they're doing in the world. And I think that that is so important. And that's the reason that I created the sober method, is I needed something to be bigger than myself that would continue to improve me long into the future. And that's exactly what it does.
I love that. Well, for me, my journey was 2 years straight out of inpatient rehab, dual diagnosis center for mental health and addiction. And 2 years, 6 days a week, right alongside my husband, and we outgrew it. So friends out there, if if it's not working for you, if what you're doing isn't working, maybe it's not you. Mm-hmm. Maybe it's the way you're built and designed, and maybe you need something different like Massimo's sober method, or maybe you need something in addition to, supplemental to. And the game changer for me, Massimo, and why I became one, is working with transformational coaches, because mm-hmm. our goal is to move people forward. That's it. Mm-hmm. That's our goal. It's great traditional therapy, rite of passage, go do it. Take a look backwards, see where you went, see what happened to you, see why, but always be looking forward into a future that you're not catastrophizing.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, into a future you're not catastrophizing. So I love that. You saw a need and you filled the gap. And now you work with people that are solely using your sober method, friends, that's mm-hmm. S-O-B-E-R, or as supplemental too. But friends, mm-hmm. do not give up. That's what we're telling you. If what you're doing isn't working, try something else until you find the right fit for you. And that goes with everything that you do. That's your therapists that you pick. That's your personal coaches that you pick. That's your mentors that you pick. And that includes your recovery programs, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And I'll just say that I do this a lot on my own podcast. I see sober as like a master framework to build yourself into the greatness and to remain sober mm-hmm. for a lifetime. But a lot of people out there have thought the same thing I have and have created what I consider kind of sub programs that complement areas where it might be very difficult for someone. Like I had someone on the past week who has a program that has an acronym that is literally all stacked within the observe step. And so I framed that whole episode. It's like, look, if you're struggling with the observe step, maybe, you know, check this out. This could help you. Because the ultimate goal for me is you find your sobriety and you build upon it and you have a structure that works for you, because that's the most important thing. Do I want you using the sober method? Of course. I wouldn't be here talking about it if I didn't.
Use the sober method. Yes.
But I'm also saying that there are other tools that I'm not saying don't use. I'm actually bringing light to those because I think they support the sober method's overall goal. They're not a full framework, which this is, but they could support people along the way. And I think that that's so important.
And have a team underneath you guys. I have my holistic psychiatrist who does meds when we have to, does supplements when we can. I had my therapist for a while, but I have mentors, I have business coaches, and I have a personal coach. So build a team around you as much as you possibly can, because for some of us, it takes more than one person.
It
takes a village. Yep. Look at my case, and it does take a village. So, all right. The women who helped you find sobriety. Oh, the woman who helped you find sobriety was later killed by a drunk driver. How did you process that grief, that anger, and the cruel irony of the loss? How did you get through that and stay sober?
I tell you, I never really thought of the term black irony until someone I interviewed on a podcast about 3 years ago said that term after hearing the whole story. But I met Samantha Allison Thomas at the peak of my addiction. And the best thing that I can really say is that she was the love of my life, and her belief in me outpaced my own. And she saw me in a way that I was unwilling to see myself at that time, and showed me that I could get better, and pushed me all the way until I did. And thankfully, there was a period of time where she knew me as sober. She knew that the sober method existed before she was murdered. But it was very, well, I'll tell you, it's the only moment that I had when I got the phone call. It's the only moment I considered having a drink after becoming sober. But then immediately, almost, you know, just within a second, I said, no, I'm not going to do that, because this will be the way that I can honor her legacy. And it really cemented my, up until then, it was just something I shared with people when I heard they were struggling. It wasn't like a mission. I mean, I didn't even have the book yet. She was about to graduate with her MD, and we were going to co-author a book about it. You know, she'd bring the MD and I'd bring the grit of the story, and it would be a great co-authored program. But after she was murdered, it was, okay, I'm going to do this. This is what I'm going to do. And I'm going to bring this light to the world, and I'm going to help others. And that's what I've done since. And it's very rewarding. And it helps me keep that memory alive, because I think about Sam every day.
Oh, my friend, I'm so sorry for your loss, but I do want to highlight something that you said. You had that brief, that split second moment of, I'm going to go back out. And then you turned to your mission. Mm-hmm. You turned to your purpose. And you turn to your new meaning. Mm-hmm. Guys, when we have a purpose, a mission, and meaning in our lives, we make healthier choices for ourselves. We do. So whatever that gnawing is in your heart, it was not placed there by accident. It was placed there by the divine source, God, goddess, energy, higher power, whatever you call that for yourself. And if it keeps gnawing, they ain't going to go away. So you might as well go ahead and listen to it and do the thing. Do the thing, guys. Do the thing. But yes, having sobriety first matters, because you make much better decisions. So I love that we do, don't we?
Yes.
Like, we don't end up in prison. Yeah.
Slightly better.
Slightly better. But I love the fact that you honor her memory every day. Every time you come on a podcast, every time you talk about the sober method, and every time you work with somebody, and the book did come out. I mean, that had potential to really tank you, and it didn't. Again,
it didn't. And the one thing that I think about it is she was a force multiplier in the end. You know, she saved my life without a doubt. But because she saved my life, I've saved countless lives, and I know that I have. I have the letters and the emails and the calls to prove the fact that that has occurred. And nothing. Every time that I have a win like that, I always, you know, bow my head and thank her, because she gave me the opportunity to make that big of an impact in this world. And every life is sacred, and every life it deserves to carry on and to be sober, because that's how you are best fulfilling yourself in this world.
Exactly. Every life deserves to be sober. Guys, I just want that to settle for a minute, because that's very, very profound. You deserve this. If you're out there struggling right now and you're listening to this, you deserve sobriety. I promise you. It's hard in the beginning. It is. Mm-hmm. It's a tough one in the beginning, those first few years. But man, it is so worth every ounce of no's that you say, no, I'm not going back out. It's like Massimo had the opportunity that split second. There have been a few split seconds for me too. Mm-hmm. And I've said no to them. And life is, man, we have memories we get to keep now. You know, mm-hmm. You deserve memories you get to keep. That are beautiful, because you weren't out there doing stupid shit, making bad choices. You know, like I would definitely be in a urn or prison without sobriety. So yeah, I was facing some serious risks. So, okay. Speaking of that, because I was a high performer, I was a high achiever. I had all the things.
You were a workaholic.
I was a workaholic. I had the dollars. I had the pretty family on Facebook. I had the cars. I had the toys. I had it all. And I was miserable. So many high achievers that you work with appear successful while privately depending on alcohol, substances, or work, workaholic, or technology to regulate themselves. What are some signs that suggest that a coping mechanism may have become a dependency for you, even when we look like we're dysfunctioning?
It's the inability to do without that. If your mind is taken at any stress point that I need this thing, I need a drink, I need a pill, I need my phone, whatever those reaches are in high stress moments. And if we're being honest with ourselves, you know that you have a problem. But where it really shows up in those that I work with is they have a close call, because they have a very, very good facade. They might be a physician, a lawyer, a judge, you know, somebody who has a lot to lose. And they are carrying it privately, because if the public knew it, they would lose everything. And then there's a close call, being pulled over for a ticket, but then maybe not someone not realizing that they were actually drunk. And so they get off. Though that's generally when I get a phone call. I need help. I can't possibly, I saw how close I came to losing it. Help me. And I think that we all get in that. I'm pointing it out because I work with a particular type of high achieving, high performer, professional CEO type. Those are my clients, but that happens to everybody. That happens to anybody on any level. I mean, even if you are just working a minimum wage job, that could happen. You could lose your job if you show up to work drunk. And if you run in to work and you're working and you suspect your boss might know that you're drinking and your water bottle actually has vodka in it, you know, stuff like that does happen. And you get close to getting caught. And then you realize, I better do something about this. We all have those moments. I don't care what you do for a living or what strata of society you might find yourself in at this exact moment. That's when you know you truly have that problem.
Yeah. And if you find and seek support for that problem, it will come. And if you keep trying until you find the right fit for you, it will come. And I promise you this, life gets exponentially better because you make stronger choices. You make conscious choices. You're no longer on autopilot, right? So many of us, when I was in the height of my corporate career, I was just on autopilot. I wasn't making conscious choices for myself. I didn't even know what consciousness was. I don't know. I was just like, I'm just going to work, guys. And then I'd look up 3 months later and be like, well, this sucks. I'm going back to work. So yeah, I'm going to have a drink and I'm going back to work. So, all right, Massimo, thank you for bringing honesty and some humor today. Thank you for educating me on stoicism in a simplified way. Thank you for not frying my brain today.
Or putting you to sleep.
Yeah, or putting me to sleep or our people to sleep. We've had some people hang out with us the whole time. It's awesome. My friends, recovery is not merely the removal of a substance. It's just not. It can require us to confront grief and shame and fear and mental health struggles, which get missed in a lot of recovery communities, and survival identities, which you know darn well we talk a lot about in here. So Massimo's story reminds us that sobriety is not about becoming a different human. It's about being present with the human that has been underneath it all along and being cool with that. You know, when you dig yourself, and you're making conscious choices, things shift exponentially. Massimo, if somebody's listening and they're struggling, how may they reach you? How can they find you?
Best way to find me is SoberMethod.com or all socials at SoberMethod. And I do want to point out, I do have a new book coming out on Thursday. That's 2 days from today.
Thursday, no way!
Yeah, it's already available for pre-sale. It's called Digital Sober Method. I took my method that is for substances and everything, and I've over the last 3 years funded some of my own research and put together something that is very unique in helping people put down their phone using the sober method.
Oh, please, guys, put your phone down and connect with each other. That's what we're doing on these podcasts. We're having human conversations. I love that, Massimo. Grab his book on pre-sale, guys. You don't have to write anything down. We're going to put everything We're going to put a direct link so you can just click on the link right below this episode and grab the book. Let's try to get those sales up, because really we all have a little bit of addiction to some social media and to some digital stuff. And you're right, Massimo. I'm assuming the book includes all the science that tells us how terrible it is actually is for us. So it sounds like it's a good one. I'm super excited for it. All right, Massimo, before I let people go, we always ask our guests two questions. You ready for them?
Go ahead.
All right. First question is this: in your own life, what did you perform in order to survive? And what did dropping that role mask or performance do to improve your life?
Well, I put on a mask that I was confident my entire life when I was just a very meek, like nearly incapable of doing anything without the performance mask of, you know, I was quite capable, but I had that mask on, and the longer I put it on, the heavier and heavier it got, until one day everything just fell apart. And that's how, you know, I ended up losing everything and was homeless. So don't hold your mask that long, you know, realize that you need to do something about it. And I'll tell you, it's the ability to feel confident within my own self. That's the real takeaway for me, is in the positive takeaway of not having a mask, is just being honest. Sometimes being honest, it hurts a little or it's difficult, but being able to say things and how you truly feel to others, that actually builds great relationships. And if people can't handle your honesty, then they're probably not somebody that you want to be friends with to begin with.
Yeah, they're not a good fit for you. I love that. Drop the mask before it gets too heavy, where it really crashes you, my friends, and find real confidence. And you can do that through the sober, S-O-B-E-R method. I love that. All right, last question. What do you wish we were having more human conversations about? What topic?
I wish we were having more conversations about how we connect with our true identity. And how we create stronger representations of self. Not the self that we're told that we are supposed to be, but the self that we truly are. And we're all in a performance, and we all kind of go outside every day and we pretend that we are something that we may not be. We can operate within the confines of society, but wouldn't it be nice if you could just truly be yourself? And I know people say, oh, be yourself. And it's kind of cliche. What I mean by truly being yourself is, you know, be respectful of other people, but also know what your hard lines are and carry yourself with the confidence to know that this is what I represent in this world. This is who I am, and be proud of that.
I love that. And be honest about where you're at in it.
Yes.
Yeah. Today's not a great day. It's okay to say when somebody asks how your day is.
Don't fake it on social media either. You know, like don't have this curated view of your life for the world. It doesn't help anything. That's a,
it's not helping us, guys. It's not helping us, because then nobody knows the truth. Right.
Yeah.
And then people start looking at them going, oh, well, it must just be me. Well, it's not just you guys. We're all suffering in different ways and different capacities, guys. But man, when you find sobriety through methods like Massimo's to supplement what you're already doing, you find the right fit, there is immense freedom to find and be who you truly are. So, and with that, my friends out there, I'm going to ask you the same question. Don't forget to ask yourself, what are you performing in order to survive? And how could your life improve if you dropped the role mask or performance? Massimo, thank you so much for being my guest today. As always, my new friend, it's such a pleasure to be with your presence. And friends out there, I'm your host, Lisa Lacey, and we will see you at the edge next time.